While the story of Elisha is very interesting, you may wonder why in this day and generation we need to spend a week or opportunity gave 2 weeks thinking about this man. Well, he's pretty important. Who was his mentor? Elijah. Elisha is a specimen of the Elijah message in practice. You've heard of the Elijah message? John the Baptist is a precursor of the Advent movement, coming at a time when Baal worship, Ahab and Jezebel, all actors in the great controversy drama, bringing pressure to bear on everyone. A message represented by Elijah, sounding out. If you had to write down everything Elijah said, you wouldn't need much paper. You'd get it on a 3x5 card. Elijah was no talker. Elijah was a doer. Elijah was a liver. He lived. And Exhibit A of Elijah's ministry was Elisha. What he did, what he taught, what he lived, what he, though dead, still speaks, is an example of what the product of the Elijah message should be in these last days. Last evening, we thought about the call of Elisha from his plow and his farm and his comfortably off father to a ministry of 2 decades of which nothing is said but that he poured water on the hands of Elisha. He kept him going. He kept him scrubbed up. That this son of Shaphat, of Abel Meholah, should do that, reached the court of the king. Now, what was going on in those some 20 years? What was happening in Israel? Well, let's briefly review. You find your Bible, the 21st chapter of 1 Kings. The 20th chapter of 1 Kings, following the call in 1 Kings 19, 19 to 21. Briefly called. Now, what's going on? Verse 1 of 20, Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, came. The enemy came. Troubles came. And attacked. And the wishy-washy king, verse 2, Ahab, he could worship idols, but he couldn't defend Israel. He said to him, verse 4, My God, O king, according to all thy saying, I am thine and all I have. He was chicken little. Take everything I want. Well, Ben-Hadad was encouraged to ask some more. This time some of his courtiers, who had a little more than spaghetti up their spine, says to him, Verses 7, 8, and 9, you've got to stand up. This fellow's going to take everything you've got. Then Ben-Hadad made a further threat. Here's Ahab waiting. Ahab, remember, Ahab. Notice what it says in chapter 21, verse 25. But there was none like unto Ahab, which did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up. He is prime example of apostasy and rebellion against God. Now go back to chapter 20, verse 13. And behold, there came a prophet unto Ahab. You know, the Lord is fantastically kind. Here's Ahab and Jezebel, all the things they did. God sends a message. God gives him a warning. And a victory came because he listened to God. Verse 21, the king of Israel went out and smote the Syrians. Verse 22, and the prophet came to the king of Israel and said to him, strengthen thyself. He's going to come again. Verse 28, and there came a man of God and spake unto the king and said to him. And verse 25, and a certain man of the sons of the prophet said unto his neighbor in the word of the Lord, let's go. Now, while there may be apostasy, God has got his message. He hasn't given up. And years go by. Verse 21 is a terrible chapter. It's the chapter of Naboth in Israel. And Jezebel's arrangement to have Naboth murdered, and then his property taken. Ahab might get it. Verse 17, and the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, arise and go to Ahab and tell him. Give him a message. Well, he listens a little and feels a little, but doesn't do anything. And time is going by. And we read the battle in chapter 22, in which Micaiah came, gave a special testimony to Ahab and Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was the king of Judah. Foolishly makes a covenant with this ex half-believing, half-baked king. Made a covenant to work together. Jehoshaphat lost his life. Ahab nearly did. The prophets are still. Still ministry. Years go by and we come to the first chapter of the next book of Kings. Verse 3, the angel of the Lord said unto Elijah, arise, go. And as soon as the king heard about it, he sent 100 men, you know, and they were destroyed, sent another 100 men, then another 100 men, all to destroy Elijah. He's sending his messages, he's giving his testimony. They're right there. The help of the prophets are available. But Israel, not the slightest bit. And so, 2 decades go by. And I like to think, you know, you can read in the Bible and read in between the lines in the Bible. Very interesting things that happen. The worst book in the Bible, containing the most terrible things that I can think of, is the book of Judges. Book of Judges, those judges by and large are a bunch of crooks. Some of them were half-baked for a little while. They did what is right. God uses them to get one victory. The rest of the acts of so-and-so, he had 70 sons and he put them on 70 white mules and they go riding through town. Leader of God's people, bobbing along on white mules, big deal. When all the things are open to serve God, this is what they're messing around. 300 years. Then the Lord, by inspiration, picks up the book of Ruth. Ruth says, in the days when the judges rule, there was a certain man, a woman. There was Ruth. There was Naomi. There was Boaz. They were living. And I often think when I go for walks that I go for, I was right over here watching the squirrels the other day. Having a wonderful time. You know, they've got a life of all of their own. Social life. They live and move and have their being. We go on with ours, we don't think anything about their life. Quite close to where we live, there's a bird sanctuary. Sometimes we go and see the water birds migrating up and down. Some of them stay there. Life all of their own. Unmindful of what's going on. We'll go to the opera. We'll go to the theater. We'll watch a program. Never read a book. They're living. And I think if you read the Bible through, whatever's happening on the outside, there is always a faithful, there's always a Gideon. Everyone else, even his father worshipped an idol, as a Gideon. Responding as a youth to some inner drive, an inner force. Always. It was tragic, but it was also somewhat amusing. One day in my office at Pacific Union College, a lady student who wanted to talk with me. She came in and sat down, and she was as mad as a hornet. Nothing was right about PUC. Not a thing. The dorm was, her roommate was lousy. The dean didn't know anything. He was an old hag in the corner. He tried to give some worships, never made sense. The food in the cafeteria wasn't fit for a starving dog. As for her classes, the teachers didn't know what they were talking about. And when she talked Bible, she didn't know where it was going. Nothing was right. She had come there as a vibrant Christian, and now it was April, and she had lost her faith. How would you do from there? Well, when we had finished and prayed, she went, I hope the Lord blessed. Next visit was a young man. I mean, one on the heel of the other. He sits down there, 25 years old. Not an Adventist. Christian Scientist. Long story that I won't tell you. But he finally got into PUC. He'd done a couple of years college before and dropped out. Served Uncle Sam. Now he's back. Never been in a place like this in my life. He says, I didn't know there were guys like my room. The fellow gets down on his knees and prays. He prays for me. When I went to first worship, I thought, okay, this is a queer place to have worship in the morning, to have worship in the evening. In my mind, I went into that place kicking and screaming. Sat down there. Listen. You know those talks that Dean gave got me. He was setting up ideals I'd never thought of. You know, I'd never met any food like they served in cafeteria. I was a beef and potato man. This was all new. You know, I feel so much better. So much better that food is delicious. And the teachers in my classes, I have never met a bunch of more concerned men. I went to school before, they couldn't care less. So I was a number. Now they talk. Now they know my name. You know where I'm at. The best thing of all is the Bible class. I've learned more in this little time than I knew all my life. Because I'm quite sure that the Lord has brought me here. One after the other. Same place, same food, same classes, same dorms, same worships. And I thought to myself, the message of God is like the overhead cable in San Francisco.
stethoscope tape.
You can lift your hand up, take hold, and power will work the machinery. Or you can let go of that power line, and you go down into the bay. It's there. It's in the air. You can get it, let go. One fella gets it, the other fella lets it go. Or you can read through the Bible, and you can discover that all the time. Book of Judges ends. Everyone did that which was right in his own eyes. But in the days when they were doing that, there was a man like Boaz. And there was a woman like Ruth. The Moabite. Cursed be Moab. The Lord had said. But wriggling out from under that curse, you know what the word Ruth means? Rose. Somebody long ago said, Book of Ruth lies like a rose between the purple of Judges, between the ermine of Judges and the purple of Kings. A rose. Like the lily that grows up with the sludge and the slime and the decaying matter down below and the face is fragrant. Days of Ahab and Jezebel, you get a young man like Elisha, who's ready to leave everything. I don't know what the pay scale was that Elijah paid him. Nobody seems to be concerned. Those days, think of the contrast. Elijah, Elisha, Ahab, Jezebel. Palaces, chariots, horsemen, servants, retainers. One cave to another cave, to a humble home to another humble home. Contrast. Choice. Choice. Ahab and Jezebel got what they wanted. Jezebel was finished with her life. At least her body was useful to the dogs for a meal. Did a little good right at their end. Helped to feed a dog. Is that a parable of life? That's what happened. That's what you finish. And you go to the end. There's Elijah. What happened when he finished? In his end. In chapter 2, 2 Kings. And it came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind. 2 Kings 2, verse 1. Now, Prophets and Kings says that by revelation, sons of the prophets and Elijah knew the time would come. Something was going to happen. They didn't know when, and they didn't know how. Here it says, in retrospect, when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha to Gilgal. Now, in the book Education, we are told that Elijah rebuilt the schools of the prophets that Samuel had started. Couple hundred years before. Samuel was a genius for location. If you had to raise up schools of the prophets, where would you build it? Sort of place. Well, he chose, as we say here, Gilgal. Gilgal. Now, what does Gilgal mean? Remember, I said, I never ask a question that you can't understand. Can't answer. Somewhere there in the crevices of the computer between your ears, you've got the fact. Press the right button, it'll come right up. Remember the story of the children of Israel? Under Joshua? when they had crossed Jordan, the manna ceased. Remember? They ate the corn of the land. You also remember that for 38 years, the covenant, symbolized by circumcision, has not been carried out. And so the Lord says, I want to enter into a covenant relationship. You will be circumcised. You will pledge yourselves to serve me. And I will roll away the reproach of Egypt. Heard that story before? Now if you look in your margin for roll away, you'll see it dulled out. Roll, roll your burden away started there. That's where their burden was rolled away. Gilgal means rolling. With all the connotation of beginning again. Of entering into a covenant. You know what Paul says the Christian counterpart of circumcision is? Baptism. Baptism. You may want to think about that sometime, going back to the story of Abraham. How it could be. Perfect parallel between circumcision and baptism. Life is ended. You're buried. You're laid down. You've got no possible ability of extending your life further unless God lifts you up, resurrects you. So Gilgal was a place of beginning again in the history of Israel. If you wanted to put a military base, you do it in San Antonio. Remember the Alamo, all the sacrifices that were made there. Give you courage, to give you strength. And you go to various places in American history, or you go to England, in various places of English history, or in any country you want. And you see certain geographical locations that are in the mind of all who say the name of that place, are filled with a big picture. Samuel says, that's a nice place to start schools of the Now Elijah, as the leader, prophetic leader of God's people, goes to the students there and he talks to them at Gilgal. Now when he had gone to Gilgal, he said to Elisha, verse 2, why don't you stay here? The Lord has sent me to battle. Now why did he ask him to do that? See whether he was faithful. See, his job was to pour water on the hands of Elijah. And Elijah was well ready. He was alive and well. He needed hands poured water on. Now, Elisha could have thought to himself, I'll be leading here. Next time I come talk to the students at Gilgal, I'll be the chapel speaker. And look at me. Oh no, I haven't finished with my job yet. He that endures to the end. He that is faithful in that which is least. That was his assignment. That was his appointment. That was what he was going to do. Not even Elijah was going to stop him from that. So they went to Bethel. Now what had happened at Bethel? Another school of the prophets. What had happened before at Bethel? Do you think? First time we are told, Jacob's ladder. The compact that Jesus made with Jacob. Jesus would be with Jacob. He's the angel of the Lord. He's the ladder. Remember he told Nathaniel? You'll see the Son of Man. The angels of God sending up and down on the Son of Man. As Jacob had seen the ladder, the angels of God ascending and descending. Notice the order both the Old Testament and the New Testament say. The angels of God ascending and descending. Is that the right order? If you were telling the story, would you tell that? If the top of the ladder was in heaven, and the bottom of the ladder was here, would you say the angels of God were ascending and descending? Or the angels of God were descending and ascending? You'd say descending and ascending. Bible says ascending and descending. What does that tell you of where the angels were?
Right. Never forget that.
They're not up there waiting to descend. They're down here, helping, waiting to go up for the incidental order. This is their place. They ascend and descend. They don't descend and ascend. Both the Old Testament and the New Testament. So at that place called Bethel, Bethel means, what's the L? House of God. Beth is house. And it's made up of two words. It's made up of a B. And the B in Hebrew, the Beth, is an inseparable preposition which means in or at. And the eth part of it, E-T-H, is a Hebrew word that sounds different in different combinations. When it's by itself, it sounds like off. But when it's combined with other syllables, it moves from eth to ath. Remember Uriah's wife's name? Bath. You remember the place where Jesus was born? Bethlehem. The Bath or the Beth or the Both, depending on what word it's in, is the B and the Oth. Now, Oth means a sign. A sign. You go down the road and you see a illuminated shaft of glass, red, white, and blue stripes slowly turning round, and you look at that, yeah, that's where I get my car repaired. Is that right? No. That's a sign of what? A barber. Now, the Oth would be that sign. And if you saw a great red star with a T in it, that's where I buy coconut milk. Oh, no, no. That's a sign of gasoline. So these are signs. That's this word. Bath finally came to mean at the sign of. And the Lechem is what in Bethlehem? Lechem is bread. Beit Lechem is at the sign of the baker, or at the sign of the bread. That's exactly where the bread of life came to earth. At the sign of the baker. Beit Lechem. By the way, it's the same idea in Saba. Bath is at the sign of. The Ab. The Tzab. Sahib. The revered father. At the sign of the revered father. So he was going to Bethel. So at the sign of became the home. We put up our shingle, we put up our name. This is where the songs are. So, Bethel is at the home of or at the sign of God. So Samuel says, I'm going to build the school of the prophet. So he did. So Elisha and Elijah go up the hill from Gilgal up to the top of the hog's back, north to south, more or less, in Palestine. There they visit the students at Bethel. And when they were finished, Elijah said to him, why don't you stay here? Moreover, in verse 3, some of the sons of the prophets came to Elisha and said to him, don't you know that the Lord's going to take your master, Elijah? Yeah, he says, I know. Hold your peace. He hasn't done it yet. We're not there yet. Mind your own business. Elijah says to him, why did you stay here? The Lord sent me to Jericho. Jericho is a strange place to build a school. Jericho was a city that was cursed. It was destroyed. But who came out of Jericho? Why wasn't he caught up with all the mess of Jericho? There's the whole thing. Why not? The Lord took her and put her in the genealogy of Christ. Like he picked up Ruth and put her in the genealogy of Christ. Like he picked up Leah. Jacob didn't want Leah. If you look at the genealogy of Christ, and it's not Rachel, it's Leah. The Lord put Leah in that time. The Lord sees not as man sees. Leah was an ugly old frump. Jacob looked at her. Rachel was beautiful. When you look at the genealogy of Jesus Christ, no mention of Rachel. Leah's there. No mention of Rachel's children. Leah. Judah came right down the line. You know, the Lord does a lot. Never be fooled by looking at the surface. Always something behind. The Lord sees. So they go down to Jericho. The sons of the prophets were at Jericho, came to Elisha and said, you know, he's going. Elijah's going. Yeah, I know. Hold your peace. Elijah, when they were finished with that, said, tarry here. The Lord has sent me to Jordan. No, he says, I'm going with you wherever you want to go. So they come to the river Jordan, and they needed to cross the river Jordan. And 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood to view afar off. Two of them said, two of them, Elijah and Elisha, stood on the edge of Jordan. Elijah needed to go, so he takes his mantle off, strikes the water, just as it happened with the case of Joshua many, many centuries before. 4, 5, 6 centuries before, at least. 600 years before. They went across on dry land. What is the Lord trying to tell us in his sign language? He has the same power. He has the same power that he had 600 years before, he has now. And when the need comes, he can do the same thing. So the two of them go over. And it came to pass, verse 9, when they had got to the other side, Elijah says to Elisha, what do you want? Ask me, and I'll give it to you. And he says, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. What is this double portion? Now, sometimes, if we read it quickly, we think it's twice as much. And I remember when I was much younger than I am now, asking myself, how could Elijah give twice as much as he had? You can't give more than you have. And he wanted twice as much. That's what I thought. But then I suddenly discovered that the double portion was given to the heir. That if a man like Jacob had 12 sons, he would divide his property into 13 parts and give a double portion to the one that had the birthright. If he was like Isaac and he had 2 sons, he would divide his property into 3 parts, and he would give 2 parts to the son that got the birthright. So the double portion became a technicality for being the heir, the successor. Elijah and Elisha had evidently talked over the matter of what Elisha was going to do, and Elisha is saying, I need to be anointed as your successor. I need your spirit. I need it to be in me as an index that I am your servant, your successor, doing your work. Now notice what Elijah said to him. If you see me go up, you'll get it. Now what does that mean? That Elisha was to show his concentration to his task until it was finished. There were 50 sons of the prophets that were there viewing, and Elisha could have easily said, I can take over now and chair the committees. I can make the agenda. I can swing the vote. I can lead. Oh, he was still pouring water on the hands of Elijah.
And so they too went on, verse 11, and talked. And behold, a chariot of fire and horses of fire parted them, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And all the 250, or the 50, sons of the prophets of the field saw that UFO. Nobody's identified it since then. The chariot of fire. God's method of taking it. And I'm sure that on his way up, Elijah must have thought of that juniper tree in his last prayer. Lord, I'm too scared to do it. Help me commit suicide. Take my life away. Funny prayer to pray when God had translations round the corner for him. And those horses of fire were neighing and champing at the bit just around the next corner. And you may want to study sometimes in the Bible the prayers that should never have been asked. That's one of them. Human point of view, that Tommy Rot. God's got eternal right, life for him. He said, Lord, kill him. Didn't tell him then. He could have said, Elijah, that's a little silly. I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to translate you. You make a list. There are quite a number of prayers that should never have been prayed. Abraham prayed, all that Ishmael might stand before thee. Ishmael should never have been born. But the Lord listens and the Lord follows. The Lord is a wonderful father. You can say anything to him, however silly it is. If you're sincere and humble, he's not going to scold you. He's going to wait for you till you see the reverse of what you thought was the only way out. As Elijah went up into heaven, his mantle fluttered down. That's the sign language of God. You're the successor. The mantle of Elijah has fallen on Elijah. Now Elisha picks it up. Jordan is flowing. He does exactly the same thing. Crosses the Jordan and meets the 50 sons of the prophet. Now he's back in the, quote, real world, unquote. Now they've seen this, these 50 sons of the prophets, and they come to him and they say to him, verse 16, thy servants be 50 strong men. I like that. They're strong. This investigative committee is made up of strong men. We got heads. We're not fools. Let's go and investigate and see if the Spirit of God that has taken up Elijah many times may have let him down over the hilltop. And he may be hungry. Perhaps we could help him. And Elisha says, don't do that. Don't. Verse 16, at the end of it, he shall not send. And when they urged him till he was ashamed or embarrassed, he said to them, send. And they went, looked for 3 days, came back. No marks of a UFO, no signs of Elijah. He's gone. Now they were the sons of the prophet. They were the students. They were ready to be prophets if they would surrender to God. And this is their attitude. Now, what did this attitude do to the youth that were around them? And we look there in verse 23. And he went up from there to Bethel, which was just on the hilltop. And as he was going there, there came forth little children. Now this term, little children, have you got any other version here today besides King James Version? What does yours say? Yes? No, before that, who came up? Verse 23. It's small boys. Now that also misses it. Yes?
Yes.
It's got to be youth. The Hebrew word is youth. And so Prophets and Kings calls them ungodly youth. Not little children and it's not small boys. It's late teeners and young 20s. That's the size. Ungodly youth. Now look up strong. Don't believe any version. Go look it up. Look at the various uses of the word and say, now, this is what it means. There came up 40 ungodly youth. Everyone was talking about the translation of Elijah. This committee had been going on. It was a search committee that had done everything it could for days. Now, the skepticism from the adults spilled over into the ungodly youth. And they see Elijah, they make a chant. Go up, Baldy, go up, Baldy, go up, Baldy. Whatever they did, whatever rhythm they put in it. Go up, thou bald head. And Elisha looked back and cursed. Now that's a nice word. What does the word curse mean? Swear at? Fall at a word? What is a biblical curse? Removal of blessing. Correct. The removal of blessing. And blessing is? To do what? The gift of God to? The first time blessing is used is where? Yes. Genesis 1. God blessed the whale. And the fish. Daddy whale, mama whale, all through the happy hunting ground of whales. God said to those, be fruitful, multiply, fill the water. Moses, under inspiration, telling the story, said, and God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply. Now deduce from that the meaning of blessed. God's empowering of His creatures to fulfill the purpose for which He had created them. That's blessing. Now the next blessing is man. Now if you compare man's blessing, the whale's blessing, and He blessed them saying, be fruitful and multiply, just the same. Fill, just the same. Have dominion and subdue. So God gave man, Adam and Eve, power to dominate, dominion. Put them at the head. The divine empowering to fulfill the purpose of creation. You want to make it shorter? Blessing is divine empowering to fulfill intrinsic function. Whatever is intrinsic for you, whatever talent God has given to you, whatever talent God has given to a grain of wheat, whatever talent God has given to a butterfly, a bee, bees got a function to fulfill. You wouldn't have apples if there weren't bees. Or you wouldn't have almonds if there weren't bees. I had a student one time whose dad's a beekeeper. Truckloads and truckloads of hives he'd take all down the San Joaquin Valley at certain seasons. Dump them here and there and they'd go pollinate miles and miles of orchards. But don't look down on the humble bee next time you eat an almond. Think to yourself, somebody ministered to this or I wouldn't be munching. God empowers the bee to fulfill its intrinsic function. Divine empowering to fulfill what you have, what you've got in it. Now, while we're at it, we may as well look at the word grace. What is grace? Remember Paul's three prayer meetings for the thorn in his flesh? Take it away. What does the Lord say? My grace is sufficient. Now, how does Paul respond? Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in infirmities, that's the power of God. See, grace is the power of God that makes us adequate when we don't have any intrinsic ability. The divine empowering to fulfill the extrinsic ideal in Christ. See, blessing helps you to do what you can. Grace enables you to do what you can't. Jesus Christ wants. Now let me use an illustration that I use many times at this point. We'll say Sonia had to arrange for special music tonight. And she brought on a stick a canary and a crow. Which one would need blessing and which one would need grace? See, a canary needs blessing. It's got intrinsic function. It can sing. But a crow needs grace. Never forget those two. Blessing and grace. They are twins. They're both the power of God. They're both unmerited. They're both given free. Sometimes we're like the crow. We can't do the job that we've been called upon to do. And we say, Lord, give me grace. Give me grace. God says, my grace is enough. It'll help you do it. And you do it with his grace, and you do it. But two of them go together. My grace is sufficient. Now, what is curse? Curse is the removal of that. There was a fig tree full of leaves. Remember? How many years had the gardener been coming to look at that fig tree? Then it was given another year, remember? So when Jesus Christ came to it, it was 4 years. What did the fig tree represent? Jewish people. What had happened 4 years before? Who had started his ministry? John the Baptist. 6 months and 3.5, that's the 4 years. John's opening message was, the axe is placed at the root of the tree. Remember? 4 years later, the axe was lifted up. That parable is chronologically down to the year. And if you look at Desire of Ages in that section on the cursed fig tree, the blessing of God was removed. The tree could no longer fulfill its intrinsic function. It withered. The curse is the cutting off of the blessing of God. Not any mean thing God does. You've cumbered the ground. You've been drawing the water and the moisture. There are other plants that are more valuable. You've had your time. You've finished your probation. Cut it off. Put something else in there that will grow. Now, grace, blessing, divine empowering, divine protecting, divine sustaining to fulfill the divine idea. Both intrinsic and the ideal extrinsically held to the point. Now these ungodly youths brought up in these families, they knew all about Elijah. They knew all these things. They knew about the story of the fire coming down in Carmel. Everyone knew about that. Wasn't to say there were billions of people scattered over a great area. Few people in a little tiny area. Oh, look on the map at the amount of material that is there, everyone knew. But because those sons of the prophets were unbelievers, oh yes, if you had asked them, they'd believe. They'd believe. Elijah had the spirit of prophecy. We believe in the spirit of prophecy. Elijah told them, God's going to take me away. We believe the spirit of prophecy, but let's investigate. We've been given heads. We've got to investigate and see whether this is so or not. They investigated. It didn't work out. But the ungodly youth had heard that. They picked it up at breakfast, and they picked it up at lunch, and they picked it up at supper, and they picked it up at this. So when Elisha came walking, they were going to make a fool of him. Go up, thou bald head. So he removed blessing of God. Two she-bears came up. Now the same thing had happened when the children of Israel were wandering in the wilderness. The desert was full of all kinds of vipers. But when the blessing of God and the grace of God were there, those vipers didn't touch them. But when God removed his protecting hand, there were bites all over the place. The story? Yeah, they were in the same desert. Last year didn't do anything. This year only there's a plague of them. God removed his hand. He removed his protection. You want to be independent? Be independent. You want to use your own head? Use it. Discover it's full of spaghetti. You want to go your own way? Go. You'll discover it's not the way. Never fail. Never fail. Now the Lord let those two bears come out. What did they do to them? King James Version says, they tore them, tear them, T-A-R-E. What's the King James, New King James say? Mauled. What does the RSV say? That's the end of verse 24. Tore them. The word is whop. That's not a good English word, is it? Like a bear whops you? I wouldn't like to be whopped by a bear, would you? See, they needed a spanking. And the Lord sent two she-bears out to spank them. They were mamas, and they knew what to do with the ungodly youth. And they walloped them. Now, here you've got a picture with three parts. There's Elisha, there's the sons of the prophets, there's the ungodly youth. All reacting to the same event. All seeing the same thing happening. One believing and receiving a double portion of the Spirit in the symbol of the robe, a mantle comes down. And you know when they came and looked, verse 15, they came to view when the sons of the prophets that were to view at Jericho saw Elisha, they said, Spirit of Elijah doth rest on Elisha. They knew it. Something about him. They knew that he had the Spirit. But did they believe it? Don't go look. This is not your business. Oh yeah, we believe in the spirit of prophecy, but we're going to check. We're going to investigate. Okay? Wasted time, wasted money, wasted talent. But that unbelief that was expressed there by their act, more than their words, affected the ungodly youth. Elisha, halfway house, sons of the prophets, all the way out, ungodly youth. All at the translation of Elisha. Take that story out. Laid over this part of the 20th century. There's a translation ahead. There are chariots and horsemen of fire ahead. There are angels of God ahead. They're going to catch the believers as Elijah was a believer. Take them up to heaven. That's ahead. We don't follow cunningly devised fables. There are many infallible proofs just around the corner. What is our reaction? Question? Scientific method? Got to use our heads? What happened to the kid? What happened to the youth? Out of the bank. How careful we should be about how we react, how we talk, how we exempt. Claim to believe. Thank God they're always the product of the Elijah man, believing Elisha, standing there and everyone knowing the Spirit of God. As we set out for our activities this day, let it be with a prayer that God's blessing, God's grace, God's Spirit represents both. May fill us to the extent that His presence in our lives will be recognized. Let's pray. Our loving Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for the matchless stories that thou hast left us in thy glory. We thank thee for the way their meaning and message fly invisibly across 3,000 years, speak to our hearts in this quiet place, this lovely morning. Take out from our minds doubts, skepticism. Drive us, Lord, by thy Spirit, to dig into thy word, hear thy voice saying, this is the way, walk in it. Keep us from presumptuous sins, that by our even unspoken attitudes, we may not cause one of the youth to stumble. Surround us by thy love this day. May angels of God walk up and down this campus, in the quietness of this place. May thy peace fill our hearts. We ask in Jesus' name.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.